Hey everybody, welcome back. We have an awesome session today talking about one of the things technologists fear most, public speaking. We're gonna go through and talk about how you can structure an actual presentation, and we're gonna actually get the chance to talk to my friend David Chappell, who is a professional speaker, and not only is he good at it, but people pay him to do this. He's worked with many different companies, Microsoft included, and he's actually goes there and speaks and is going to kind of break down some of his thought process about how he makes presentations and what he thinks about as he goes through and actually produces for these presentations. David?
Hey, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining me.
Sure. You bet.
So let's get started. How do you begin to phrase and think about the presentations that you're giving?
It varies depending on who I'm talking to, what the topic is. But I would suggest that for any technology presentation, there are three things you want to think about. I think of them as the three I's. The first one, of course, is information. You're conveying facts. And that's the foundation. The thing is, it's easy to believe that when you're giving technical talks, that's all you're doing. But it's not. It never is. It never should be. Because really, if your audience just wants facts, they can go to the internet, they can read this stuff, right? What you can provide live in front of them is not just information, it's insight. It's connections among these facts. And that's really important, much harder to get. And finally, in some ways most important of all, the third I you can give in a live presentation that you really can't do as well in writing is inspiration. Mm. You can give people feelings, and feelings are what change behavior. And as a speaker, I would suggest you're always trying to change behavior. Make folks agree with you, make them do something differently, use this technology, buy that product. You're trying to change behavior. And that requires feelings, that requires inspiration.
Yeah, and that's what sticks with you too when you leave that presentation.
Yes,
you really remember. You really remember that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So when you're giving these presentations, inspirations, feelings, we're not usually talking about that when we're on stage as a technologist. How do you actually convey the content in a technical nature? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, we'll come back, I think, later on to talk more about feelings and how to convey them, because it's really important. But really, if you don't convey technology effectively and clearly, you've failed, obviously. And so, to me, there's a simple way to think about how you're conveying your content. You start with some base. You assume the audience already knows something. You then figure out what you want to build on that base. What do you want to add on top of that? What do you want the audience to know? Your presentation is then nothing other than a clear, direct path from the base to the goal. That's it. And so this simple picture, I think, can help us clarify what we're trying to do. You want to make sure that you clearly define the assumed knowledge base. It's really easy to be blurry about this, and then you lose the audience. You confuse them by assuming things they know things they don't know, or you bore them. Mm-hmm. So choose this effectively. You want to make the goal not too much bigger than the base. You can't be too ambitious. And the presentation should be nothing other than a direct path from the base to the goal, nothing else. That's what you're doing. And so to me, thinking about my presentation in this way, I find it to be very useful. It keeps me on the path.
And this is something that you do before you even start the presentation, right? So this is all kind of pre-work when you're formulating what exactly you're going to be saying.
You bet. This is how I write presentations. Mm-hmm. I start by thinking, what do they already know? What do I want them to know? And how do I get from point A to point B? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's important to think about how much there is.
It is
in the beginning there.
It is.
When you're looking at kind of the actual content within that presentation, so you've outlined the base, and you kind of got to the top of where you want to go. Mm-hmm. How do you define exactly what's in the middle there?
There are lots of approaches. There are lots of things to think about when you're constructing presentation content. I would suggest that the most important one is structure. Mm. You've got to get the organization right. And in practice, that means telling a story. It means telling some kind of story. I don't mean a fairy tale. I don't mean a novel. I mean, there's some flow. There's some beginning, middle, end to what you're saying. Having a story is really important. It's a big deal. I think also important is that you build that story one step at a time. If I think about the single biggest mistake that I most often see speakers about technology make. It is that they leave things out. They leave out really important parts. And so the audience gets lost because some part that the speaker, of course, knows, the audience doesn't know. So try hard not to leave out any steps.
When you're giving a presentation, are you able to judge by kind of the audience's look or engagement if you've skipped a step? And is that something that you can fix in real time?
In my experience, that's rarely true. If you're giving a talk to five people, then yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. They will say, David, I'm lost. Or if they're polite, they'll say that, right? So that works in a small group. In a bigger group, especially as part of a longer, more formal presentation, they're not going to do that very often. Or if the group is really big, they can't. Mm-hmm. And so in my experience, making this choice effectively up front is really important, because it is very doggone tough to do this on the fly. Not in little tiny groups, but in medium to large groups, it's very difficult to do. In fact, the way I think about this is that as speakers about technology, all of us have to fight what is sometimes called the curse of knowledge. Mm. We know our topic well.
Yeah.
That's why we're speaking about it. And so it's easy to forget that our audience doesn't know all this stuff we know. And so remembering what we found hard to understand is important.
Mm-hmm. So how can you put yourself back into the shoes of where you were before? What do you do? What are your techniques for making sure that you're not falling victim to the curse of knowledge?
Well, so this is interesting. Tell me, Andrew, how much do you have to know about a topic to present effectively on the topic? Must you be a deep expert, or can you know just what's in your talk and nothing beyond that?
Well, for me, it depends on how comfortable I want to be in front of that audience. Sometimes if I am a deep subject matter expert or so in that technology, I'm much more confident on stage. And I'm like, yeah, ask me any question and I can answer it, or at least talk enough about it that people think I know what I'm saying. And I think I can fall victim into that knowledge trap when it's so deep and kind of getting in the weeds of that.
Well, sure.
Question.
I think we all feel that way. We all feel much more comfortable when we know the topic deeply. Mm-hmm. But I would suggest to you that if what you're giving is a broader intro where you need not know all that deep content, you'll probably do a better job if you're not as deep. Because you won't be tempted to go deep. You can't go deep. And more important, you're probably closer to the time when you learned about it. And so the curse of knowledge is easy to avoid. You don't have as much, and you remember what it was like.
Yeah.
So it's a funny thing. I think often as presenters of technology, we can be most effective when we don't know the most. It's weird, but it's true in my experience.
Yeah, it allows us to like think about what the most important pieces of the content are in order to get from point A to point B.
Exactly. You want to prioritize. Mm. You want to convey not everything you know, but just the important stuff. In fact, I would suggest something else you want to think about. I don't mean you, all of us. I think about this myself, is that it's tempting, especially when you're very deep yourself, to talk to the smartest people in the room. If your audience has a range of experience levels, as they often do in your topic, it's tempting to talk to the 95th percentile. And if you do that, you're going to lose people. Now, they'll think you're smart, mm-hmm. but that isn't your real goal.
Yeah.
If your real goal is to communicate effectively, to me, I would suggest that people should aim at like the 45th percentile, not the lowest, not even the middle, just below the middle, because they'll still think you're smart mm-hmm. and you're more effective as a speaker.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing about this. Are we all visual learners? I think we are. Our brains have this enormous chunk devoted to vision, and so diagrams can matter so much. Diagrams are hugely memorable. I sweat bullets to create pictures in presentations, even about abstract things, because we remember pictures so much better than we do text or lines of code or anything else. So I encourage anybody talking about anything, even technology, to try to build pictures as much as they possibly can. Diagrams are just so darn memorable.
They really are. And if you can combine not only the diagram, but with what you're saying, and then also relate it into something outside of the scope of technology. I kind of like that idea too, where you can bring that kind of into some sort of another piece that they can remember.
Yeah, you're right. Colorful and memorable analogies and metaphors can be incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a very good point. I don't do enough of that. I got to think more about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting too, because it can kind of plan like your presentation style too, depending on, mm-hmm. I think sometimes people can go get away with more metaphors, depending kind of on who they are and what their personality is on stage, versus maybe some others that might not come across the same way, depending if it's one speaker or another speaker saying it.
Yeah, I think you're right. But you know, speaking about presentation style, getting the content right and conveying it effectively is really important, but it's only half the battle. The other half is style, how you are on stage in front of an audience, whether it's a large group or in a conference room with five people. Style matters a lot, and I would suggest, my experience has been that there really is only one way to convey content effectively. Hmm. You start small, you make a linear path to your goal, and you get there, right? That's it. But for presentation style, gee, there are all sorts of ways to be effective. One thing I have found in speaking around the world, for example, is that styles that can work really well in America, that are very American, very outgoing, very active, can seem very strange in Japan, for example, where people are more reserved and speakers are more reserved. They can still work, though. They can still work. So cultural styles and personal styles vary enormously. But you can be effective as who you are. You need not adopt some strange persona to be an effective speaker.
Mm. That's good.
In fact, one way to think about this is this. It's to say that to be a speaker, you want to find some part of yourself that works well on stage, then emphasize that part. That speaking is theater.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking is theater. And for most of us who are technology people, that's an uncomfortable idea. I'm an actor? No. I'm a geek. I write code, whatever.
I'm a little scared to be considered an actor.
Yeah,
it can be intimidating to stand up and do those things.
But think about yourself as an audience member.
Yeah.
You want to be at some level entertained, which doesn't mean jokes. It mm-hmm. means someone that's engaging to watch. And so it's theater.
Interesting.
It really is.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I do agree with the fact that it's theater. I never really studied theater much, but I always did like kind of being on stage, whether that was kind of behind a microphone or making jokes. Maybe if I wasn't doing this job, I would have a failing career in comedy.
Andrew, it would not be failing, I'm sure. Well, people like you and me do this as all or part of our jobs, so mm-hmm. it's a little bit different. For people like I suspect most of our watchers, it's not your core job, it's part of what you do, but it's important. Effective communication is important in all sorts of scenarios.
It is, and since this isn't really part of a lot of the viewer's job, how do you handle nerves? So I guess one thing that can be nerve-wracking is when I get on stage, sometimes I just, there's a lot of people watching, and what I'm saying is being recorded, or we're going to talk about it later. I built a diagram, and people are going to remember that. How do you kind of overcome the nerves?
The only thing I've ever found that works for that is practice.
Mm. Yeah.
The first time I gave a talk to like 2,000 people, I went from speaking to 30 to 2,000. Remember how terrified I was. I reached for my glass of water before the talk began. My hand was shaking so much I couldn't even get the water to my mouth. I was terrified. But now I do that fairly often. And I'm comfortable because I got used to it. To me, the only way to get better at this and to become comfortable is to do it, is to practice. Do you agree? Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, I definitely think, going back to kind of what I was saying before, when I'm really comfortable with a topic and I can go deep in it, that's one way I feel comfortable on stage. But the other is, like, I know my story. And I know what I want to get on stage, and I know exactly what I'm going to say. I'm not a huge fan of scripting out every word, because I kind of improv regardless if I script it out or not. So I try and make sure I have, like, 3 to 5 words of, here's what I'd like to say, here's my main idea, and I kind of build around that. Before moving to the next one as I give those presentations. And if I have that down and I can look at each slide and say, here's my 4 bullet points of 5 words of what I'm supposed to say on this slide, I'm completely ready, and I know that I've prepared to the utmost of I can, most of the most that I can to be ready for it.
Yeah, I understand. Before I give a new talk to a good-sized group, I'll do the whole talk live in my hotel room the night before.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing.
Yep.
Just so I feel prepared. I'm with you. Preparation is everything. Yeah. You know, one more thing I'd say. A style comment here. People ask me sometimes, you know, David, what's the one thing you would tell us to be a better speaker about style? And when I only have one bit of advice to give, what I always say is pause. Mm. Learn how to pause. Because pausing like that,
yeah,
it sucks your attention back, doesn't it? An audience can be restive or doing other things. If you pause, they'll stop. They'll look at you. And pausing when you're speaking can feel like, oh my God, I'm pausing and saying nothing for, what is it, an hour now? No, it was 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. To the audience, it's a nice mental break. So pausing is one of the most effective things you can do today to be a better speaker. Learning how to pause. Practice it so you feel comfortable and recognize that your long pause is the audience's relaxing breath.
Yeah. Something that you can also practice in normal day conversations as well. You can think about it a little bit as you converse throughout the day.
Yeah, you're right. Although, I have found this to be an issue. When you're a speaker, people like drama to some degree. Mm. They like theater. If you speak that way, like at dinner with your children, they think you're very strange.
I think they already think you're very strange.
Oh, thanks, Andrew. I'm so glad I'm here today. Yeah. Thank you. You know, can we end by talking about the thing we started with, the inspiration, the third eye?
Yeah.
Because inspiration is about feelings, right? And so something that I always struggle to do with the driest of content, if you're discussing some new feature in, I don't know, Node.js or whatever, the driest of content, you got to look for emotion. Mm-hmm. You got to look for emotion. There's always emotion to find in these things. Stories are great. If you tell stories, people will remember them. People stop me sometimes at a conference or elsewhere. They'll say, David, I heard you speak 15 years ago. You told this story. They remember stories.
Yeah.
They forgot the topic of my presentation, but they recall the story. Stories are very memorable. Stories that match effectively the points you're trying to make are gold. Look for them, husband them, use them. Stories are critically important to this.
Do you look anywhere specific for inspiration in these stories when you're looking at dry content like a new feature in a product?
Yes. In my experience, the best stories are about your own life, about your own experience, that are relevant or somehow related. The next best stories are about users of that technology or customers or whatever. They're tied to it. The worst stories are jokes. A guy walks into a bar, no. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that work effectively. I never do that. But stories that are relevant, that are tied to you, tied to the content, even somewhat obliquely. People like stories so well. Our brains are wired for story, that when you tell them, people will stop and they will start listening to you.
Yeah, it's a good point. And something that everyone has stories, right? You can't tell me you haven't done anything and there's no story.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Everyone has stories. You have to look for them, be aware of them in a way that we're not in our normal life. But to be a good speaker, I think, looking for and then holding on to and using those stories can be really helpful.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, David. I think we've made a great point here on why it's important to be a communicator and to practice strong communication, as well as how people can get started and make their communications better.
I hope so. I'm convinced that being a strong communicator can be just as important as being a strong technologist in having a successful career.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
All right.
Well, thank you, David.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, everyone out there.
Bye-bye.